Welcome to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast, a show that offers you tips and strategies to help speakers build the business of their dreams. Now, here's your host, 30-year industry veteran and business coach, Jane Atkinson.
Well, welcome everyone to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast. Today, we're talking about reclaiming your life and your business, really, after tragedy. And I have my client with me, Julie Henry. Welcome to the show, Julie.
Thanks, Jane. It's so great to be here with you.
Now, I'm excited to talk to you, a little trepidatious maybe too about the whole process that you've been through, but we've been together for some of it. And let's talk current, and then we'll circle back and walk through what's gone on in your life. Talk to me about what's going on, what your business model looks like today.
Yeah, so today I am an author, speaker, facilitator, panel moderator, just all things speaking as it relates to interacting with people. And it's built on the foundation of a book that I just published in January. So it's all based on helping people drive and survive change. And I use animals as a hook and a way to level the playing field when it comes to talking about leadership.
Drive and survive change. And I'm thinking you know something about this. So let's kind of back to the beginning and talk about you. Well, talk about how you got the animal angle in the first place. What was your day job all the way back to probably just before we met?
Yeah. You know, it's not lost on me, the irony that my whole business and life and passion is built around change. And then now we're going to talk about great upheaval. But, you know, the reality is I've always been super comfortable with change. I'm the person that you either love or hate to work with because I'm like, let's try something new and let's try something different. And then, you know, from the very beginning, I was working in zoos and aquariums, but my dad was a leadership development guru. My mom was a teacher and I was teaching people, but I was teaching people about, you know, standing in front of the beluga whale habitat at Shedd Aquarium or teaching people about elephants at Busch Gardens down here in Florida. And it was super awesome. But I was always interested in the corporations because I was always saying every place I worked, you know, the XYZ corporation is going to need someplace to have a retreat, to do a team building, to do a leadership development session. And they can pay thousands of dollars to the Hyatt or they can pay thousands of dollars to us. And it's far more interesting and practical, in my opinion, to stand outside a coral reef tank and talk about differences in communication and assumptions we make than it is to go to the Hilton.
So it literally takes people into it to a completely different setting. And maybe their armor comes down because they're standing in front of whales or something cool. Yeah. And that's a great way to. So you started promoting corporate work while you had your day job.
Yeah, I was 22 years old and Nabisco called. They have a huge, you know, plant outside Chicago. And I was just the loud, you know, squeaky wheel, if you will. So someone passed the phone call to me and the Nabisco person's like, well, what could you do for us? And I'm like, well, here's all my ideas because it had been a college project I'd worked on and we booked it. And then I was like, okay, well, you know, probably I should get some other people involved because I'm only 22 and I got a lot of ideas, but not a lot of street cred yet. So I needed some help. But yeah, every place I went, you know, we had corporations, government groups, everybody wanting to come to us. And then I jumped ship and did the opposite. You know, once I left that world, I was out in the corporate world working with my clients. But if I could tell you a story about cheetahs and naked mole rats, you know, you're paying attention.
Right. I'm definitely paying attention because I'm very interested. I love, and sometimes when you and I are talking, you have a cat stroll across your desk. And I'm like, yes, that's so perfect. It's so apropos. And I hope it happens when you're actually delivering corporate work because it's totally in line.
Yeah.
Okay. So you had these jobs for how many years and at what point did you decide to leave and pursue speaking as your full-time gig?
So I worked for 10 years inside zoos and aquariums. Most of that was nonprofit, but I did work for Busch Gardens, which was owned by Anheuser-Busch, which was a Fortune 100 company. So that's significant because I understand both sides of the coin when it comes to doing consulting and training and speaking. But in 2008, you know, quite honestly, two things happened. I had a baby and I was commuting 59 miles to work each way. And I had, you know, kids from all over the world staying in, you know, on-site dorms. So I was responsible for people all the time. And I was bored. I mean, it's hard to get bored working at a place with a roller coaster, but I just didn't care about someone else's budget numbers anymore. I wanted to flex my own creativity muscle and try new things. And when you're the child of two entrepreneurs, you know, you're bound to try that. So in 2008, it was like, I'm just ready. We're just going to try it.
Sounds like that timing was right on the money. Not. So, okay. So you go out and you say, ta-da, I'm Julie Henry. I'm here. And I've got all kinds of lessons that I can bring you from the animal world, et cetera. And what happens?
Yeah, kind of the exact opposite that I thought was going to happen. So the people who were really interested, like Southwest Airlines, you know, they would come to Busch Gardens and do things at our park. And now all of a sudden I'm Julie Henry on my own. And they were like, nah, we don't know if we want to work with you because we don't know if you have the right experience. I'm like, well, I'm the exact same person I was 2 months ago. I just have a different title. So it was jarring. I didn't lose it. I just didn't have the same credibility that I did when I was ironically working with a title that someone else gave me at a brand that someone else created. But it was super jarring. It was gut-wrenching.
How did it affect your confidence?
Oh, gosh. I mean, you feel like you're gutted, right? You're like your knees are swept out from under you. You know, I had just as many people tell me, you know, we don't think you have enough experience. We don't think you know what you're talking. And then on the other side of the coin, I would have people saying, well, you've got too much zoo and aquarium experience. You don't have this kind of experience and this kind of experience. I'm like, well, and so now that's, you know, to be fair, I had some clients along the way, but I kept looking around at everybody else, like, why is everybody else succeeding and I'm not? That's how it feels sometimes. Yes. You know, and I have this daughter and then a son eventually looking at me like, gosh, it's hard to define right now. I'm a mother. Now I'm in a different area. And it wasn't COVID yet. We weren't being super transparent about all this difficulty. So I was hiding everything. Like, I have a meeting. Like, shoot, no, I have to get my kid down for a nap, you know? So yeah. I didn't have anybody to like bear my soul to. I hadn't met you yet, Jane. I needed your help.
I came along somewhat later, but I think it's just really helpful for people. We're talking about really kind of coming back from anything difficult. It could be a disruption in your business. It could be losing your mojo. And I think that happens to people on the regular. I've had it happen to me and I've like worked my way back up to where I know. I definitely had it at the beginning of COVID. Okay, so you're moving along in your business and you're starting to see a little bit of traction. I think we probably started to work together and leadership becomes the umbrella under which you put everything. And when I first met you, your husband had already been diagnosed with cancer and you were in for quite a journey. Talk a little bit about that and the result of the journey.
Yeah. So to give some context, I left my business in 2008 and I left my job, but the job I left was at a marine laboratory and an aquarium here in Sarasota, Florida, at which my husband, that's where I met him. And so he had been there for 25 years at that point. And so I had worked with him for 5 years. So our work and our passions were always intertwined. And so I left in 2008, we had two babies. And then in 2013, in February, so this is 2 years before I started working with you, in the span of 3 days, day one, my husband gets a call from the doctor that says they found a softball size mass in my lung and they're worried about it. Day two, the executive director at the Marine Laboratory decides he's going to retire. So now his job is up in the air and our health insurance is up in the air. And day three, we get a letter in the mail that says, we're taking your house in eminent domain and you have 30 days to vacate. So like literally everything, like, you know, talk about Maslow's hierarchy, like everything was like, flat. You know, and so I then had to figure out, okay, I have a 3 and a 5-year-old. I have a husband now going to battle cancer and I don't know where we're going to live. And he may or may not have a job. And my income's not at that point steady enough for him to leave. So it was like, it was 10 years ago. Like, and as I'm talking to you now, I can feel it. My heart rate increases and I can feel the shortness of breath because it was the idea of running your own business is super exciting. And then the reality sets in. Like I can't tell you how many times, Jane, I would go to some speaking event or something. And it was like, gosh, you know, he's in the hospital getting surgery or we're setting up for another clinical trial or we're flying to Seattle tomorrow to go to some blah, 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 blah. You know, I was speaking in Orlando and he was in the hospital and someone was supposed to pick him up for me after whatever procedure. And this person called me like, are you done speaking? Because my cousins are coming over for dinner. And so I can't pick up your husband. And I'm like, I'm literally 2 hours away. I'm working. I have to bring in this income. Yeah. And so my poor husband almost had to take an Uber home from the hospital because I couldn't get him a ride. So like all of the like realities of life just hit just at a very basal level.
I can't even imagine like layering on the eminent domain thing and the job and the insurance. And it's so frightening. I live in Canada. You live in the United States. And it's so frightening when you think about all of those things combined. So the battle with cancer was a rough one for how many years, and talk about the outcome.
Yes. So he ended up battling for 5.5 years. And so the reality of that is that many, like many of your listeners, probably Jane, you know, the way I connect with my audiences and my clients is by telling stories about my family, about my experiences. And many times I'm in front of technical audiences. So I'm joking like, hey, you know, I'm married to a scientist. I get it. I get, you know, I got to ignite your right brain or something like that. But I started to hit walls in that either A, it would be a long-term client and they would say, hey, how's your husband doing? Like right before I went on stage, right? Or B, I was really hyper aware, like, you know, some speakers, or even when I was, you know, next on the agenda, if there were multiple speakers, inevitably someone from the stage would say something about, and then my mom had cancer and I rediscovered my purpose in life and da, 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 da. And I'm like, gosh, I just boom, you know, I got to get back into the game mindset, if you will. And so I started to try to figure out, like, I don't even know how to talk about myself anymore. I don't know how to talk to my family. And 5.5 years, May of 2018 is when he passed away. But I had work, you know, set up like 2 months later. And my dear clients were like, you know, you don't have to do it. And I'm like, well, I have to, not only for the income, but like, I have to figure out what to do. Like, I have to get one foot in front of the other, because if I don't, I don't know if I'll speak again. Honestly, it was like that. It was like learning a whole new language. That's the only thing I can equate it to. Like, I've moved to France and I got to figure out how to speak in French. That's what it felt like. That.
Wow. And you also had to still be out there, and you also had to really navigate the landmines that you might have stepped on, which would turn into what? On stage, like you told me about panic attacks and various things that, I mean, when you're in the thick of it, you really don't know what your emotions are going to do, right? You're probably riding a roller coaster.
Yeah. And I'm a really go with the flow speaker, trainer, facilitator. Like, my whole background is in basically facilitation and thinking on my feet. And so I don't memorize what I'm going to say, right? Like, I have my idea and my script. And even if I'm giving a keynote for 5,000 people, I have my direction. And then I have, oh, this story comes up because I can feel it, the audience. So that's what would happen. Like, oh, this would be a great story. Oh, shoot, it's about my husband.
Yeah.
So, and I would say something like, well, my former husband. I'm like, gosh, that sounds weird. Or I would say something and then I'm off into some hole. I'm like, what was I talking about? I was talking about the process of change. Well, how do I get back there? So yeah, it was still is total landmines.
And he had such a connection. He worked in the business with you, right? For a period of time. And so he had such a connection to all things business for you that, and so now how do you handle that? Do you want to share how you handle it today and kind of talk about him without really saying it's him?
Yeah. And I can also share, you know, he was technically my business manager. And so I had all these emails that he'd sent. And now I have to go back and like figure out, oh, don't, you know, Michael's not in the business anymore. And well, it's not because I fired him. He was my husband. He still is my husband, but he's passed away. And here's the thing. I know I'm not directly answering your question, but while I'm thinking about it, it's like, here's the thing. Like, if something changes in your life, like, let's say I showed up and my husband's not working with me anymore because he's divorced. Like, I'm divorced. Like, chances are people don't typically say like, oh gosh, what happened? Did he cheat on you? Like, yeah. Did he meet somebody else? Like, they don't ask the details. But when you show up, and you have to decide what story you want to tell, because as soon as I say, oh, he passed away. Well, then it goes from, gosh, I'm so sorry. Can I ask why? I'm like, what did he die from? Like, well, no, you can't. Well, I'm not going to say that, you know? So you end up in this like, well, now I'm down, because then what happens? It's like being pregnant. Like, oh, he died of cancer. I know somebody else who has cancer. Now we're off on all these like oh my gosh, I just wanted to book my speech so I can pay my bills, you know, or I can have my impact. Anyway, so it's part of that journey. So I've had to refigure out like how to, oh, and
what I was getting at was when you're telling stories from the platform.
Yes.
You'll say, and so there was this friend, blah, 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 blah. You'll refer to him as a friend. So you don't have to go down the big rabbit hole and explain or say anything about being a widow or what have you. And I think that we just find our way. We just try to figure out how to manage in a difficult situation. And that's what works for you right now. Who knows what's going to work for you later on, right?
Yeah. And I didn't figure that out until I wrote the book. And when I wrote the book, I thought he has to be in here because my stories are in here. And when I finally figured out, landed on my friend, that worked for me. And so I just had to embrace it for the time being.
Yeah. So I have a hard time imagining. I'm not even going to say to you, oh, I can't even imagine. Because it's not even enough. It's a silly, I can't. I have no clue what this feels like, but I will say that for the first 3 years of my husband and my relationship, I hung on for dear life because he had had a heart attack 3 years before he met me. Mm-hmm. And so I know what that feels like, but I can't even go there in my mind. So you're how many years beyond, obviously, you said 2018. We are 4 years down the road. And do you feel like you're starting? I mean, I've watched you evolve because you circled back to me in the last year. And I have watched you get your game on. And I just want to say what a pleasure it's been to see the badass come out and play. I don't know that I ever really knew that badass before. You kind of have... So let's go back to when you first published your book. I remember one of our meetings where you were like, this isn't working. It's not happening. Like, and I'm like, wait a second. Your book was published, what, 3 weeks ago? Come on, let's just talk about this. So talk about, let's go from the book forward and kind of who you've evolved to be since writing that book.
Yeah. And so he passed away in May of 2018. And I can't say enough about my National Speakers Association family, especially the Central Florida chapter, because holy cow, did they show up for me. It took me months before I could go back to a meeting. And then it was because someone picked me up in my house and I sat by the door and I was like trepidatious. Right. And so that happened. And then people would like pay for me to come. The administrator would say, hey, someone paid for your registration next month. You should come. Yeah. And so it was little things, but they're not little, but it's little. Oh. And then, you know, what happened is there's a man, a mentor in my chapter. So any of you who are involved in the National Speakers Association, Barry Banther, who is past chair of the board, you know, he's down here.
Love.
Yeah. And he had met my husband because we'd gone out to a winter conference in San Francisco in 2016. So he'd met him, and Barry is a gem of a person. And he came up to me after a meeting. This was in summer. So been a year. And he came up to me and he said, please let me know how I could help you. Mm-hmm. And him saying that to me, I just got all teary eyed. I'm like, Barry, I don't know what to do. And he was like, you need to call me and we're going to have coaching. And so I went to California that summer. My kids went to camp. I'm sitting at a little cottage and I called him. This is July of 2019. And I was saying, Barry, I want to talk about animals. I want to talk about animals and change. I've been doing this since 1996. I just have to do it. I don't know how. And I'm going on and on and on. He said, well, give me some examples. So I started talking about naked mole rats and all this stuff. And he cut me off and he was like, Julie, this is a book. You have to write this book. And I was like, okay. I'm like, no. And I have a picture of the table with all my note cards. Although I still have my note cards. They're right outside the view of this lens here in Zoom. And I was like, oh my gosh. And he said, nope. I'm going to connect you with my publishing company, Greenleaf Book Group. I want you to connect with them, see if it's the right fit. So 1 month later, I was like, you know what? If Barry thinks I can do it, I'm going to try it, because Mike would be like super on board. And Mike was super, my husband was super practical, right? Scientist. And so I'm like, okay, drank a glass of wine. I'm just going to like try it. So I put together this, you know, book proposal and I'm like, okay, I'm going to hit send. And then in September, you know, it was supposed to be 4 to 6 weeks. And 2 weeks later, they called me and they were like, you know what? Thank God someone put a new spin on leadership, because we've published so many leadership books. We're kind of getting sick of it. I mean, not really, but you know, it's something different. So that was 2019. And then COVID hit, which happened to be a breathing disease. And my husband died of lung cancer. So all the panic came back in. So now, you know, I thought it would be really quick. And so I hit another year and a half of panic attacks because people would say like, oh, you know, I'm watching people not be able to breathe. I'm like, yeah, I know about that. You know, I slept next to somebody for 4.5 years, 5.5 years, they couldn't breathe.
Oh, geez.
It took me a long time. So go through COVID, book, okay, just figure it out. Just try it. And then once it got out there in the world and once I felt like my stories were in a different place and I felt like my husband was, you know, releasing me a little bit, like, it's enough, right? It's enough. And then I think, you know, what I told you, Jane, is I have this dear man in my life who I've known for 25 years. And he was like, Jules, you just don't have to prove anything anymore. And that was it. That was one of the lightning switches. I mean, there's been a lot, but that one in particular, I can think about a couple of months ago, I was like, okay.
So you took on a new attitude.
Yeah.
I'm debating whether or not we say what it's called. Let's screw it attitude, but y'all can imagine that we're using a much stronger term. Use your imagination. And so you took on this attitude and you started to, you had been doing a lot of things or in your business, I think we decide or we hear, oh, you've got to do that. And you really gotten focused on what you actually want to do. So what did you let go of in the process of adopting the screw it attitude?
I remember a really formative conversation with you, Jane. I'm sure you'll remember this as well. This was almost a year ago now. And I had given a keynote/training. And it was small. It was like 50 people. And one of the people I received feedback from, they said, well, it was way too much about you. Like it was too much. And I took that so personally, like it set me back for months. And well, number one, now I realize that was really important feedback to get because I haven't retooled it, but I'm just aware, right, of different things. But B, there, as I've taken on this new through it attitude, I just am so driven by the fact that I now understand I'm not there for everyone. Yeah. And it's not just about whether or not to be liked or not, or whether or not everybody wants to give me standing ovation or whether it's I'm worth my money or whatever. It's just more about like, there's like my mindset is like, I'm there for somebody, maybe not everybody, but I'm there for somebody. And for that person, like I can't be afraid anymore because that person needs me to show up just like my husband needed me to show up. And if I can walk next to him as he like, you know, literally is bedridden for months and I can be the caretaker and never, ever call in home health. Gosh, I can stand up in front of an audience and talk about change and help people think about it in new ways and be okay with the fact that maybe some people don't really get much out of it because someone did.
Wow, that's perfect. That's perfect. And it's so interesting how the brain works. You get 99 positive feedback forms, but if there's one negative, which one do you hone in on? The 99 positive or the one negative? The brain is a funny, funny creature. And I love this idea of I'm not there for everybody, but I am there for somebody. Somebody needs to hear what I have to say today. And I think that the lesson from making it about yourself and then always having a counter with it's to make it about them, I think that's just something that you tweaked and massaged over time to be like, yes, it's about me, but here's how it responds to you. Because everybody goes through some version of change, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have loved watching your evolution, and I think that this is a terrific, for somebody who is in year one of what you've gone through, and now you're in year four, and what advice might you give to somebody who is in the thick of it? It might not be a husband, but it could be a parent dying. For some of us, and I have a feeling that I'll be one of them, my dad's passing was something, but I think my mom's will, you know, I've been so hyper-focused on her for so many years. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of scared about it, to be honest with you. I worry that I'm going to fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
What advice do you have for someone who is in, I'm not even there yet, and I'm asking for advice. What advice do you have for someone who's in year one of something tragic?
I would say that number one, you don't have to accept the labels that everyone else gives you. So, mm-hmm. you know, all of a sudden people wanted to call me a widow or people wanted to call me single or they wanted to just define me in certain ways. And I didn't accept those labels and I didn't want to go down that road. And the associated point with that is that not everyone deserves to hear your story. That, you know, there are times when I'll say, you know, yes, my husband used to work in the business, or tell a story about him or say something. And there are times when I will not. And I know that there's questions. You know, one of the things that I hate the most is that people assume I'm divorced. You know, I'm relatively young. I'm 47 years old. He got sick when I was, what, 37, 38. And he passed away when I was 43. And so typically, stereotypically, if you meet a 43-year-old, the assumption is going to be that they're divorced rather than widowed, just the way that the cards go, you know? And I hate that. And so sometimes I have to just check my ego at the door. Like, I'm willing to let this client, this audience member, this whoever, just think that and make an assumption rather than correcting them. Or, but I get worried, right? Like, it's hard to figure out how to honor our story, my husband and my story, our family story, my children. It's hard to figure out how to honor them. So that's the first big point. And, you know, the other thing I would say is that there's no magic bullet. There's no course. There's a lot of support for grief, but there's not a lot of support in my experience with how to redefine and chart your course. That's the whole. I can, like, my grief is different, especially for any of you listening who've been a caregiver for anybody in your life, your best friend, your neighbor, whichever, you know, you're caregiving and you're, and everybody talks about, like, you have to take care of yourself, you know, put your own oxygen mask on first. All of those are true statements. And then there's grief. Okay, fine. Yes, it's terrible. But, like, when you have, when you are caregiving for a long time, you're sad for a long time. So, like, the death is not the sad part. That's like, oh, thank God he's not suffering anymore. Like, I'm sad, but I'm not as sad as when I was, like, you know, literally wiping his butt because he couldn't do anything, you know, in the bed. So recognizing that there's not an easy fix. But you take as much time as you need and you make your baby steps and you just let people around you support you and you tell them in whatever way you need to, I need you to walk next to me. I don't need you to solve my problems. I don't need you to support me. I need you to sit down next to me while I cry. You say nothing. That's what I need. And that's the best thing. And that is uncomfortable, especially in the States, maybe in Canada, but in these cultures that we live in, at least over in the Western cultures, we're super uncomfortable. We want to solve, we want to make it better. And I say it all the time, like, my kids are sad. And you know what? Fine. Let's lay on the floor and we're going to all cry together. And then we're going to get up and we're going to walk outside and we're going to live another day. Like, that's why he fought so long for. So if you can keep that mindset that you just need people along next to you, I think that will help you feel like you are going at exactly the speed you need to go for you.
And it's so important what you said about the grief being in the caregiving phase. I mean, you're watching someone who you knew as this decline in themselves physically, and that is so painful to watch as well. And so I think that's really interesting. Okay, so redefine and chart your course is the goal, and bring people onto your team who will walk beside you.
Can I say one more thing really quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
A dear friend of mine who is Buddhist, at Mike's celebration of life, my friend came up to me and he said, you know, in the Buddhist faith, we believe that if all of us who loved your husband can embody one characteristic of his and live that out in our own life, then he never truly dies. And I have taken that to heart in many facets. And that's how I comfort others, right? Because half of caregiving has been comforting others because they're like, you know, they feel sad too. But that's why I continue to tell stories about him, because I feel like every time I can tell a story that he's a part of, even if the audience doesn't know it's him, then he lives on and it becomes about his life and not about his death. And so that, I think, is another way that tragedy can fuel you as a speaker, and you can honor their, it's not their legacy and it's not their memory. It's their life. It's them living through you.
Yeah. And I just want to say, for those who might be curious, that you will likely start to talk about him a little more easily over time, and maybe he'll become a more central focus of your stage. I mean, that is something that is an evolution that needs to happen on your timeline. So don't rush it, is I guess what I'm saying. Well, Julie Henry, rock star, how would you like people to connect with you? What's your best connection medium, like LinkedIn or your website? JulieCHenry.com. Do I have that right?
Yeah. JulieCHenry.com. I'm really active on LinkedIn and Instagram. I have a personal page on Facebook. People are welcome to connect there. But yeah, I would say LinkedIn, Instagram, or shoot me an email. And I'd love, and please, however I can be of support, like if I can walk next to any of you, oh my gosh, it would be my greatest honor.
That's lovely for you to say that. I want to say thank you so much for showing up today and for kind of putting it all out there on the table, because not easy to talk about. And I'm very grateful for you to talk to us about it. And I'm hoping we're not showing up for everybody today, but there's somebody out there who really needs to hear this message and needs to hear that, you know, you have come through the fire and you have emerged a total badass in my mind. And I just want to say congratulations to you. And hopefully we'll hear some people talking about how this has landed with them. And for those of you who are tuning in, thank you for being with us today. And with that, we'll say see you soon, Wealthy Speakers. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast. If you need help building the speaking business of your dreams, head over to WealthySpeakerSchool.com and take advantage of our 20-minute next step call. Thanks for listening to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast.